All right, good morning. It is good to be together. Let me invite you to turn to the land of Leviticus. Leviticus this morning, Sefer Vayikra. If you're grabbing a Pew Bible, page 80 will be helpful. The words will be on this lovely screen behind me as well. As we continue today working our way through, taking this journey through the Torah, what are the first five books of our Bibles and what we have been calling the Jesus backstory. And with that, today we come to Parsha Metzora. Parsha Metzora. Parsha again meaning portion or section. The Torah divided into 54 parshiot, and today we come to number 28. Parsha Metzora travels from Leviticus 14 and 1 all the way through to the end of chapter 15. Noting Metzora is really a continuation of Parsha Tazria from 2 weeks ago. If you missed it, you can always go online and have a listen there. Tazria, on one level, is really about rituals of purification. If you were here, you might recall that it was began with a woman who conceives and gives birth to a child, either a boy or a girl. It then goes on to speak about conditions of the skin and then about mold. And yet underneath all of that, remember, it was about the holiness of God. It was about the honor of God. It was about life, and it was about vitality. It was about united with, and it was about emanating from the source of life. Noting all of that continues today with Parsha Metzora, describing again the purification ritual of skin diseases and mold, and then it wraps up with the instructions regarding the law related to the emission of bodily fluids, be it male or female. All of which, as we saw last week, is confusing at best. In fact, the Jewish scholar and professor Benjamin Summer, he writes, there are probably no Torah readings as widely misunderstood as the Torah readings for Parsha Tazria and Parsha Metzora. Now, it's interesting, often within Judaism, the Tazria and Metzora are read at the same time. They're read the same week. And you probably, at some point along, wondered, you know, there's 54 different parshiot, and there's only 52 weeks in a year, so what's up with that? Well, it's because from time to time, they're combined. And so often these are read together. Now, what makes these parshiot so misunderstood? According to professor and author Susan Handelman, she says the laws of Tuma translates as unclean, and speaking here of the process of purification, belong to a category of commandments known as hukim, divine decrees for which no reason is given. And then I love this, they are not logically comprehensible. They are not logically comprehensible, thanks for that. And as we will see, that is fairly evident again today. And so all I can say is buckle up. I've rolled up my sleeves. We're going to hit the gas pedal here and see where it takes us. Picking it up here in Leviticus chapter 14 and verse 1, the opening line, we read, Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe l'amor, which probably sounds familiar because over and over again that phrase is repeated, and said Yahweh to Moses, saying, and what does he say? He says, Zot tie Torat ha-metzorah. Translated here, these are the regulations for any diseased person. Noting Metzorah, or you can say Metzorah, whichever way is fine, but Metzorah, is one who has the plague of what is called Zarat. Zarat, according to the scholar and the rabbi Samuel Rabinovich, Zarat is a progressive skin disease that can take on many forms. When the temple stood, a person, a Metzorah, afflicted with Zarat, whatever form the disease was taking, would come to the priest who would determine if the affliction was pure or impure. Meaning, again, we can think 2 weeks back. There was Tahara and there was Tuma. Pure and there's impure. There's clean and there's unclean. Noting that most translations, it's interesting, most translations use the word leprosy here. But according to scholarship, it's unanimous, at least among Jewish scholarship. This is not leprosy. This is not at all what we think of as Hansen's disease. In fact, and this is where I think it gets really interesting, is that both modern and ancient rabbis tell us that this whole passage is much less to do with a person who has a physical disease and everything to do with someone who has some sort of spiritual sickness. From author John Parsons, he notes, it's interesting that Zerot could only be diagnosed by a Kohen, not a doctor. A Kohen would be a priest. A Kohen, a Kohen, is a priest. In other words, it was a spiritual malady that required spiritual discernment to both diagnose and to treat. From Rabbi Sandra Cohen, she writes, in days of old, when a person came down with scaly skin, weird baldness, which I think is weird to say, but scaly skin, weird baldness, whatever that is, I'm scared, or a strange discharge, he or she went to Aharon, meaning Aaron, or one of his descendants to be diagnosed. If it was bad enough, if it was indeed Zerot, once translated as leprosy, but understood by the rabbis as a spiritual, not just physical disease, the ill person was isolated and sent outside the camp to get better. So point being, although physically manifest, Zerot is more akin to kind of this outward visual sign of an inward uncleanness, of an inner uncleanness. And according to the Talmud, which is a compilation of both Jewish oral law and all kinds of rabbinic sorts of discussion, in a word, it comes from evil speech. And the way they get there is, according to Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, their interpretation was based on the internal evidence of the Mosaic books themselves, the Mosaic books meaning the first five books of our Bibles, noting the Talmud offers us two illustrations, or draws our attention to two illustrations. The first one is found in Exodus 4 and 1, where Moses is speaking against God, concerned about the people believing him. Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me, or listen to me, and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you?'" In verse 6 then the Lord said, "Put your hand inside your cloak." So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was Zerot, what was considered to be a visible sign of one's inner uncleanness. The second comes from Numbers 12 and 1, where Miriam, she's speaking here against Moses. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, or he had married a Cushite. Verse 2, "Has the Lord spoken only through Moses?" they asked. "Hasn't he spoken through us?" And the Lord heard this. And then if we drop down to verse 10, Miriam's skin was Zerot, again, considered kind of this visible sign of an inner uncleanness. Now, we can add to that, and stay with me here, we're getting there. The sages note that the word Metzora is a kind of acronym. It has this verbal similarity to Motzi Shem Ra. Motzi means to bring forth, Shem, name, Ra means evil or bad or unpleasant, Motzi Shem Ra. In a word, it means to injure or to harm. It's to use words that are derogatory or demeaning or disparaging, degrading. And all of it is considered together to be the plague of evil speech. Now, there's only one other direct reference to this kind of speech. It's found in Genesis, in Parsha Vayeshev, and you might recall we talked about Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is kind of a twin of Motzi Shem Ra. And those are the only places, and yet all over the scriptures we read, all over in Proverbs especially, we read a gossip betrays a confidence, 11 and 13, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. 12 and 18, the words of the reckless cut like a knife, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. In fact, it's so serious did the Jewish sages consider evil speech to be that they tell us there are three transgressions for which a person is punished in this world and has no share in the world to come: idolatry, illicit sex, and bloodshed. And evil speech is as bad as all three combined. Whoever speaks with an evil tongue is as if he, whoever speaks with Motzi Shem Ra, is as if he denied God. Evil speech kills three people: the one who says it, the one who accepts it, and the one about whom it is said. And it is exactly that idea, this kind of Motzi Shem Ra, this idea of evil speech, this language that is injurious, that is harmful, that is degrading and disparaging to others, denigrating others, is the kind of language that's really at the backdrop of the New Testament letter of James. And so just for a few minutes, picking it up here, third verse, third chapter, we read, "When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, verse 5, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, sea creatures, are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison." He goes on, "With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse," right? Meaning we do harm, we cause injury. Motzi Shemra, right? It's disparaging, it's demeaning. We curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. Praise, we could say, in Motzi Shemra. "My brothers and sisters, this should not be." Noting also the word praise here from the Greek, philogeo. It's actually rendered from the Hebrew and is the exact antithesis of Motzi Shemra. It means to bless. It means to speak well of. And I think we all get it, right? I mean, we all get, right? The tongue, as it is, can cause all kinds of trouble, can cause all kinds of harm. Publius, a Greek sage, he got it when he said this. He said, "I have often regretted my speech, never my silence." Now, I don't know that I can say I've never regretted my silence. I think there's times where I kind of wish I had maybe spoken up, maybe wish I had said something. But either way, to regret or not regret, the point here that James is making is centered on the tongue, right? On our speech, right? The words that we choose to say, right? Are they words of blessing? Are they words that speak well of? Or are they Motzi Shemra? Right? Are they words that bring injury and harm to another? Right? Are they words that are disparaging and demeaning and degrading? Jesus himself speaks to the importance of our words. From Matthew 15 and 10, we read, he calls the crowd to himself, telling them, "Listen and understand. What makes a person unclean is not. What makes a person tuma is not what goes into one's mouth, rather what comes out of one's mouth," right? Think Motzi Shemra. "What comes out of the mouth, that is what makes them sarat." Right, the words we choose to say, do they bless and benefit others? Right, are they words that speak well of, or Motzi Shemra? The 19th century English poet Letitia Elizabeth Landon, I think this is one of my favorites next to what I shared 2 weeks ago, Tintern Abbey. I shared this last year with you, but I love how she writes this, how she puts it. "'Tis a strange mystery, the power of words. Life is in them and death. A word can send the crimson color hurrying to the cheek, hurrying with many meanings, or can turn the current cold and deadly to the heart. Anger and fear are in them. Grief and joy are on their sound, yet slight, impalpable. A word is but a breath of passing air." Now, it's interesting. According to research, each one of us, probably me a little bit more today than other days, but each one of us will open our mouth 700 times a day and speak 18,000 words. 18,000 words translates to 54 pages written. So basically, each week, every one of us speaks a novel. Pretty long novel at that. I think the average novel is about 90,000 words. 18 times 7 every week is 126,000. So we have a lot to say. And it's interesting, right? Everything that I have said, everything that you have said, as we think back over this past week, as we think to the week ahead, whether we pay attention to it or not, whether we're aware or not, we're bringing life or we're bringing death. Proverbs 10:31, the mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom. 10:32, the lips of the righteous know what is fitting. 12:26, anxiety weighs down the heart, but a kind word cheers it up. Proverbs 15:4, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life. 15:23, a person finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word. And then 16:24, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. I got to thinking, do I have friends like that? And then I went a little deeper and said, am I a friend like that? Right? Because every time we open our mouth, every time we speak, 18,000 words a day, 126,000 a week, right? Every time we open our mouth, we have the power, right? The power, the Bible tells us, of life and death, right? The power of praise or the power to curse. Words of blessing, speaking well of, or motzi shem ra. Injurious, harmful, disparaging, demeaning, derogatory. And so the question is, what words will I choose? What words will I choose? Now, total side note, but basically every time you open your mouth, then you're speaking about 25 words. It's actually 25.7142. I had to look it up. What options did I have? And each time, is it the power of life or is it the power of death? Right, because it's really not about how many words, but it's about what kind of words. It's not about how many as much as it is about what kind, right? The power of life. And so what words will I choose to speak today? You've probably already used some of your 18,000. Let's say you got 11,643 to go. What words will you choose to speak? Right, as you share with family and friends, as you talk to the grocery store clerk, maybe the gas station attendant. Although we do have self-serve now, right? So I think there's still attendants. Right? What words will we choose to speak when we're engaging with someone who's maybe against us? Who maybe we're at odds with? We don't see eye to eye. What words will we choose this week? What will the words that I speak, that you speak, what will those words reveal? Right, we could ask, will my words bring life or death? Will my words bring healing or will they cut like a knife? Will my words speak well of, or will it be motzi shem ra? And we could ask, what would it look like to only choose words of blessing? Just imagine, what would it look like to only choose words of blessing? Can you imagine? I think if we're honest, we've all got a lot of work to do. And then what would it look like to only speak words that bring life? Vayedaber Adonai El Moshe L'amor, Zotie Torat HaMetzorah. These are the regulations for any diseased person.